listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is cartoonist Shannon Wheeler. His show of cartoons, Forbidden Love, is on now in the lobby of the Portland Center for the Performing Arts, or otherwise known as Portland 5. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus in person, Shannon.
I love it. It's a privilege.
So I met you ages ago, right? You did an opera called Too Much Coffee Man.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The logo guy is a guy whose head is a white coffee cup. And you've been churning out cartoons ever since. You're like, you don't stop. And now in the rotunda of the Arts Center, you have a show, and it's sort of, I don't know what these are, 8x5 prints of your cartoons?
No, these are the actual drawings. They're inked paper, hand-drawn, every one of them, yeah.
So there's what, 60 of them?
60, yeah.
And are all
yeah.
for sale?
Yeah, yeah.
Mostly like $150 each?
I priced them all the same. Some of them actually ended up running in like in Wired and Forbes. So, and then some of them I ended up selling to the New Yorker, and I'd redraw them more carefully. But they're all cartoons I've submitted.
But this is kind of your New Yorker work, is that right?
Definitely what I do is first submit to the New Yorker. They're the top market. And then I submit to Mad, Forbes, you know, like all the tier underneath that. But these are all geared to be New Yorker cartoons.
Right. Is there a term for the cartoon, the small cartoon with one panel and one joke that is popular in the New Yorker?
It's a gag cartoon. That's a gag cartoonist. That's pretty much the accepted term these mm-hmm. days.
So the very first one I saw is called, I'll just put this here for now. And it's a bloke looking down at a kind of a shelf with a scrap of paper on it. And his thought bubble shows him, and the time stamp is 10 years ago. And in his thought bubble, it's him putting down this piece of paper on the shelf. And his thought bubble then is, I'll just put this here for now. So I read it as he looks at a bit of paper and he remembers putting it there 10 years ago.
Exactly. And what I like about that is that it's a single panel cartoon, but it folds in on itself. And it was really catching myself looking at some piece of garbage that I'd put somewhere. And I realized I had put that there 10 years ago thinking it would be there for just a minute. And I thought, this is a universal thing. And so I just captured that, my own personal thought, I captured into a cartoon.
Alexei Sale, a British comedian, wrote a book called Barcelona Plates, meaning like license plates. And there's a scene where he throws a can of sardines over a wall in a rest stop and it goes down a long way. And then like 10 years later, he comes back and he looks over the wall to see if it's still there, and it is.
It is.
I don't think it helps the plot, but it's a sort of observation that you feel like you're the only one who's had.
I love that stuff. It's to me, it's a little butterfly of thinking, and you catch it and put it up on display of like, here's this little moment that's oddly universal.
Here's one of two kids standing at a upright piano, and the one little kid is standing on the stool looking at the sheet music, and the little girl behind is saying, what do the instructions say?
Yeah, it's coming out of this idea of sheet music is instructions. And that's one thing I've done over the pandemic, as I taught myself to read music. I bought some children's books. So I just started at middle C and then learned the little bits, and so I can plink out little tunes now. And
what kind of keyboard?
It's a piano. I have an upright.
A real piano?
Piano, yeah. I had an old roommate, a housemate, and she took care of old people and wound up getting a 1920s piano, and so I've held on to it, and I thought, yeah, I should do this. So yeah,
I've been But I feel like this joke is pitched at the octogenarians of the New Yorker.
It definitely has a... It's definitely the New Yorker vibe. They bought this one. The New Yorker actually bought this.
Did it run?
Yes, it did. Yeah. I redrew it so that I got the keyboard, I think, 88 keys. I counted them out.
Are these all roughs?
They're all roughs that I've submitted, yeah.
Oh, is that what a rough is? Submit it?
Yeah, that's what they call it. I don't think it's a popular term, but they say submit roughs, and then if they buy it, then you have the option of redrawing it to submit a final.
Under a bridge, a brick bridge, there's a couple of trolls, and one of them is typing on a laptop, and the other one is admonishing them, saying, "You're a terrible troll."
Yeah. The trolling, you know, trolling used to be fun. Like, so many things got ruined in the last 4 or 5 years. Like, conspiracy theories used to be great, and now they're horrible. And trolling is another thing that used to be kind of funny. Like, let's troll the media, let's troll this or that, and now trolling is just an awful thing. It's been weaponized, and it's political. Like, I think the Mueller report, that was the worst case of trolling, where you had Barr come out and say, the Mueller report is this. And it was really, it's just lying in a way that's vicious and self-serving, as opposed to being funny and bringing truth to power. Usually trolling was bringing truth to power, is how I saw it.
A cat in a bathtub looking to one side to another cat who's sitting on the tiles, and the cat in the bathtub is saying, "I got tired of licking." So you obviously spent a lot of time alone at home.
Yes.
Maybe with cats during the pandemic?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So what's the proportion of cat cartoons you write for The New Yorker?
There was a time where you'd bring in your cartoons to the editor in person in New York, so I'd go
Did
out there.
Did you have
there.
To go there, or you live there?
You don't have to, but it's good to go there at least 3 times a year and touch base with the editor, and some of the in-person stuff is good to do. It's not necessary, but it's always good to touch base. And the cat cartoon, I'm submitting the cat. He bought a lot of cat cartoons, but he's going through them. He's like, "You're dipping into that cat well pretty often, aren't you?" All right, guilty.
What is considered guilty. A weakness?
I don't know. I think he was just making fun of me. I love cats.
Is it that they're too easy to draw, or they're just not popular with the readers?
I think they're very popular with the reader. They put out books of only cat cartoons. I think he was just
trolling you.
Just trolling me, exactly.
Well, here's a dark one. Someone is about to be hung, and the executioner standing on the scaffold next to the lever, there's a sign that says "fully funded," and he's shouting, "I want to thank everyone who supported us in our Kickstarter efforts." Yeah. I mean, that is horribly dark.
It is. I almost didn't include it, because for the most part, the cartoons here are fairly positive, and they ask, they're like, "Oh, we want something that's gonna be light and happy after 2020, you know, like let's bring some joy back to people." And this one, I just really liked it, because I've gotten so sick of every day I get emails from my friends that are doing their Kickstarters, and it's relentless. I mean, it's great. I really do like it on one hand that people are doing these projects, but on the other hand, it's another comic book Kickstarter. Like, give me a break.
But you got to show your face, I guess, sometimes.
Yeah, and it's nice to support your friends, but it is relentless. So,
yeah.
You know, these cartoons are a nice way to vent some of my grumpy old man feelings.
How old are you?
Over 50. I have to look at my Wikipedia page to see.
A lot of them are, what's the title of the show?
Forbidden Love.
Forbidden Love, right? And it's a snail crawling towards salt?
Yes. And in a way, it's how I feel about cartooning, where I have this love, a genuine love of cartooning, but I think it's caused me pain and agony. You know, it's like, what kind of, if I'd gone into advertising, I would have had a house in Hawaii right now.
What do you think? It's been a kind of a underpaid job, and underrecognized.
It's a work of love. You know, you really have to work hard at it, and it means an idea will come to me at 2 a.m, just as I'm sliding into sleep and I'm relaxing, and an idea will come. It, like the cat cartoon came to me as I was going to sleep, and so then I have to turn on the light, write it down, and do a little doodle so I remember the image, and then turn off the light and go back.
Can't
to sleep.
You do like an audio recording, like say, Alexa, cat in a bath, talking about licking, and then just go back to sleep?
That's a good idea.
But you think visually, like if you didn't write down the, if you didn't draw the drawing, you might lose it?
I've lost 2 or 3 cartoons where I'll be going to sleep and think, oh, that is brilliant. And then I think, I'll definitely remember that. And then in the morning, I remember thinking, I will definitely remember that, but I don't remember what it was that I was thinking.
You don't remember anything, not even the joke?
Nothing.
I love this relationship one. It's a woman looking over her boyfriend's shoulder while he's typing on his laptop, and she's not very happy, and she's saying, why can't you be more like your fiction?
Yeah, some of these are probably more autobiographical than they should be.
Then there's a book signing with an empty chair, and the sign just says, meet the ghostwriter. And there's a guy who's obviously got up in the middle of sex, and he's drawing on a whiteboard or a blackboard, and he's got some very complicated series of equations, and the woman's saying, you're overcompensating again. So this one is a family of four. They're meditating in their robes, and the parents are in the front position, the two kids are in the back position, and the boy's saying, are we enlightened yet?
Which is an obvious play on the, are we there yet?
Yeah.
And yeah, it's the meditation, and meditating with kids is always a trip.
What's the target here? Is it people who take meditation too seriously and wear robes?
Yeah, I mean, the robes are a little bit of a trope. That's just playing with ideas and connecting up, you know, where are you trying to go with meditation, and then meditating with kids. And it was just connecting two disparate ideas together, which is often how cartoons work.
Do they buy this?
No, it's not the strongest of cartoons. I liked it because I thought it was sort of silly, but it's not quite zeitgeist enough for the New Yorker tends to buy things that are really a little bit sharper and more pointed. And it's interesting, like as one editor shifts to the next, the shift, like Emma, the new editor, she's
who's
a lot,
that?
The new editor, Bob Mankoff, the old editor, went off to do other things, and then the new editor, just her emphasis on relationships and animals she likes a lot. And
what's her name?
Emma Allen. She's great. She's
there's a rule though, isn't there, like if you're new, when you can submit?
Yeah, it used to be that you would mail your cartoons in and you'd have a self-addressed stamped envelope, and then you'd get a rejection letter back, and it would go into a giant pile, and they'd get few thousand a week. And I've actually gone and sat and gone through those cartoons, and then sometimes we'd write little notes saying, you know, this is almost there, or
you were allowed to do that?
I don't know allowed, but I did. the editors were doing it, and then every now and again they would kind of give the job to one of the cartoonists, and then it was my buddy that was doing it, and I was like, I want to do it. So I was in New York. And he goes, okay, just you bring the whiskey. So I came in. But you know, the thing is, like, what shocked me is that we went through every submission carefully. Like, we actually read it and thought about it. And I'd always thought, oh, slush pile, this is all going in the garbage, nobody looks. But there was real care in it. And it was, yeah, it was really interesting. I mean, we did not care about the fancy package. Like, a napkin was as good as Bristol board. And when somebody would send in a binder, we'd call dibs on the binder, you know, like we didn't care. I mean, it was, but yeah, napkins, it was great. Now it's more, they've moved digital and they want 10 cartoons a month. It's a shame, but you know, times change.
You can't submit analog anymore?
They discourage it. I don't know the exact rules, but I email in my roughs every week.
You just scan them?
Yeah.
With a scanning printer kind of thing?
Exactly.
Or a phone?
Yeah. No, it was fax up until 7 years ago, and then it's now I email a PDF with JPEGs. It's a trip.
My name's Joseph Galliman, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is cartoonist Shannon Wheeler. His show Forbidden Love is on now at Portland 5, which is also known as Portland Center for the Performing Arts at 1111 Southwest Broadway. It's in the Rotunda, and there's 60 pieces. The show runs through December 31st. Hi, it's Joseph Galavan. If you're enjoying the show, please show your support for this program and all your favorite KBOO programs by donating to KBOO's end of the year drive today. KBOO is from your voices, from your community. So show your support. Become a member of KBOO today at kboo.fm/give. Thanks very much. Here's a good one. A woman sitting on a doctor's examining table, and she's got four little monkeys clinging to her head, shoulders, and sides. And the doctor with a clipboard is saying, "You have monkeys." And then below it, you crossed out, "Would you like the good news or the bad news first?" So one, why did you switch the caption? And two, why did you leave up the bad caption, the rejected caption?
Laziness, it's easier to draw a line through it than it is to erase it. And it started as an image where I wanted to draw somebody, I wanted to draw those little monkeys because they're just so cute. And then I submitted it one way, and it looks like as cartoon 1,318. And then a couple of years later, I was like, oh, I want to resubmit this image. And I gave it a new punchline.
Oh, you can do that?
Yeah.
Just a retread?
Yeah.
And do they catch you out on that?
Generally not.
I guess if the editors change, you can start laundering all
We have. All of the cartoonists are resubmitting all the cartoons Bob rejected.
Oh, I also wanted to ask you, why is the doctor holding a clipboard instead of an iPad?
It's because supposedly you can tell the age of a cartoonist by how they draw their televisions and telephones, and that's showing my age, that I still use the doctors with clipboards.
Is it no advantage to keeping up with the technology?
I'm supposed to.
But when you draw a television, it looks like a large rectangle.
That's an easy fix, yeah.
Okay. For a long time, people drew computer monitors, you know, as cathode ray tubes, long after they were
different. Long after, because they still, that's what they had in front of them, and that's what they would think.
Should we do more of these, or would you want to sit down and talk about the books?
I guess sit and talk about the books.
I think we've probably done enough of these.
Yeah, we did pretty good on getting into depth on some of these. I like talking about them more than I thought I would.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's interesting.
I love it.
Yeah.
A lot of artists, they love to talk, and they realize they don't get much chance to directly address the visual work, you know.
I like that deconstruction of it, too. Like, I came into cartoons really intellectually, where I was like, how does this work? I mean, I guess when I started, it was intuitive, but then when I started The New Yorker, I had to think, like, what makes it work for The New Yorker?
Well, what is it? Tell us. Because half of their cartoons are not funny.
Well, that's true. I think part of it is what separates a New Yorker cartoon for a long time was that it created a narrative, so that there's a narrative that builds up to the moment and then a narrative that follows it.
One panel,
so that you have, like, what do the instructions say? You can imagine the two kids seeing the piano, seeing the sheet music, one of them climbing up. Like, you've got a little story that leads up to the bit of dialogue, and then you imagine what happens after, where they're arguing about how to play it and what to do. And so her saying, what do the instructions say? Yeah, like a single panel implies a short story, which I think in part is why they avoid a pun, because a pun is really self-contained in the cartoon and it's closed, whereas the short story form is really what the New Yorker did really well or does well, and I think that's what the cartoons were doing as well as the actual literal short stories.
That's a good tip.
Yeah.
And what about visual puns?
Generally, they've avoided them. And puns, too, are also very closed. They're not really commentary about any zeitgeist, anything that's happening culturally. A pun is just, here's this clever little thing that's folded in itself, but it's very self-contained.
How do you feel about being a West Coaster, so you can't do jokes about Manhattan life? Are they fair to non-New Yorkers?
Yeah, a lot. I was going to New York pretty often, and every time I'd go, I would just sketch furiously and take notes and draw in the subway and go around. And I have enough friends there, and I love it so much. I feel like my heart is New York in many ways. But I think it skews New York, but enough cartoonists moved away that they really opened it up, probably in the 80s.
So they're loyal to the diaspora, but then they'll accept new people, you think,
yeah,
if they're not in New York?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's a few people in town, in Portland, a couple other people that have submitted to the New Yorker, gotten in.
You have a bunch of books out right now, Greetings from Too Much Coffee Man, and this is single takes over the last few years?
Yeah, and these are, this really shows the difference between a New Yorker cartoon and it's wordplay and conceptual play, like patience comes to those who wait. And so that's, like, I'll take an expression and then fold it in a way, but it's not a New Yorker cartoon. It mm-hmm. really is wordplay or concept play. Yeah, and so what I did through the pandemic is I went back through my old comics and I would find these little pieces that I liked and I just redrew them as single panels with Too Much Coffee Man. And it was catharsis. Yeah, I just threw together a little book.
And then Memoirs of a Very Stable Genius. Guy on the cover's writing Knowledge is Power on a blackboard, and he has a Kick Me sign on his back.
Yes.
Like a teacher.
Yes.
An unsuspecting teacher. And these are, they're not just Trump era madness, they kind of predate him as well.
Yeah. And so that book, published by Image generously, and it collects some of the short stories that I've done, and then, like, there's a lot of autobiographical stuff, and then some of my favorite single panel comics as well. So, like, I met John Lewis once and hung out with him at a party and embarrassed myself just horribly. So I wrote up a little short story about that, and I got locked in the Paris subway once and with some other tourists, and then we ended up walking through the tunnels under Paris. So I wrote about that. I went to Cuba and smuggled cigars back from Cuba. So these weird little short stories. Filled a squirt gun with urine when I was a kid.
Filled a what?
Squirt gun with pee. Like, we all, four of us, peed into it. We thought it would be funny. And then once we'd done it, we realized, like, there's nothing you can do with it. You can't squirt each other. So there's nothing. It seemed like a good idea, but it wasn't. And then it got left in my closet, and then we had a babysitter who found it and didn't know it was pee and started squirting us. And I don't, it, you know, so these ridiculous little stories that I've collected over the years, and so they went into the book.
And then you have two kind of health pamphlets, full color. One's called Fighting COVID, the other's called Beating COVID. And these were commissioned by the Oregon Health Authority?
It was an amazing project that came together, and it was primarily for Down syndrome or young people, and it was to educate. The first one saying, hey, let's get through COVID, this is how to do it, wearing a mask, distancing, washing hands, and it was a hard time. And so it was like, be strong is kind of the basic message of it. And they allowed me to write it in my style and have fun with it and put jokes in there and just give it an energy and soul that I really liked. And the second one was about the vaccine, saying to not be afraid of it and how it works in your body, why it helps fight off COVID, and then why we need it as a herd.
Is this aimed at adults or children?
You know, I tried to make it entertaining enough for adults, but it's definitely aimed at children.
My favorite thing about this is the print run.
They keep going back to press, and so now it's cresting 200,000, which hands down is the most printed comic I've ever done.
So if you're out in like Bend or the Wallowas or Josephine County and you go to the doctor, you may well see this on a rack somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
200,000. Chucking them around.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It really, yeah, it's a trip. Yeah, it's good. It's a very gentle comic. Like, I didn't want to put needles in there. It seemed like that when I first did it, it was like, oh, let's have a needle as at the end. It's like, I don't like needles. Like, why? It really isn't about needles. It's about what's going on underneath and how your body is working. So, yeah, just tried to keep it real positive in a genuine way.
Is there anything else you want to say?
No, I think that's good.
I'm Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Shannon Wheeler, the cartoonist. His show, Forbidden Love, is on now through December 31st at Portland 5 or the Portland Center for the Performing Arts Rotunda, and that's at 1111 Southwest Broadway. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus with us in person, Shannon.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure. It's great. I get to talk about myself. I love it.
Hi, this is Joseph Gallivan. Thanks for supporting Community Radio. 80% of our funding comes from our members. So I want you to send some money to KBOO. Go on kboo.fm and look for the big donate button. Thanks.
Andy Warhol looks a scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
What do we mean when we talk about personality? What is your personality? It is the way you get along with other people around you and with your changing environment. You want certain things from other people. The way to go about getting those things reveals your personality. Your personality is the way you affect other people. Think about that. The way you affect other people. Another part of personality is the way other people affect you. And if other people have a bad effect on you, you feel pretty strange. You might even feel uncomfortable. Remember, part of your personality is the way you affect other people.
Estás sintonizando Portland.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy martes 7 de diciembre del 2021. Los primeros indicios son que la variante Omicron parece ser más transmisible que Delta, dijo el primer ministro del Reino Unido. Boris Johnson hizo el comentario mientras actualizaba a su equipo de ministros sobre la última situación del COVID en una reunión del gabinete hoy martes por la mañana. El portavoz oficial del primer ministro dijo que el primer ministro mencionó que era demasiado pronto para sacar conclusiones sobre las características de Omicron, pero los primeros indicios apuntaban a que es más transmisible que Delta. The Guardian.